previously on 24.
Jack Bauer is currently undercover with some of the terrorists. They're expecting Jack to help them release a single canister of Centox nerve gas in the Sunrise Hills shopping mall.
Do you mean actually let them release the Centox? Are you out of your mind?
We're monitoring the terrorists. We know with 100% certainty that when they leave the mall, they're going back to the remaining canisters.
I'll go along with your assessment. Let them release the Centox, but you better find those other canisters, or those people will have died in vain.
There is still time to move in and stop them before they murder all those people.
Audrey, we have a directive from the president. Do you realize how many more people could die if these men don't lead us to the other 19 canisters?
Lane, you tell me, if you were in Jack's shoes, could you follow through with that order? Stand by and watch as they murder all those people?
If those are the orders of the president, yes, I would have to.
The trigger's been reconfigured. You can activate the canisters now.
You better hope it works.
What's the unlock code?
Jack, the unlock code is Alpha Kilo Charlie.
Echo, Bravo Charlie!
Jack, this is a direct order from the president. Now enter the correct code, let them release the gas. Now!
Make it work!
I told you there's nothing I can do!
We have another way to release the gas.
I managed to stop the flow of gas, but some got into the ventilation system. We need to evacuate them all now.
What about the terrorists?
One's dead, one escaped. Monitor the tracking device in the remote trigger. The hostile that escaped still had it on him.
I managed to activate the valve before I got away. At least some of the gas was released in the mall.
What do you want me to do?
Come back here.
You were followed. You know what to do.
No! Hostile down!
Erwick is gone, the canisters are gone, we've got nothing here! Damn it!
The following takes place between 3 p.m. and 4
p.m. Hi, I'm Tim Isofano. I've directed episodes 9 and 10.
I'm Julian Sands, playing Vladimir Berko. I gotta tell you, Tim, that it's extraordinary. I watched every episode ever shot in preparation to work on this.
Oh, that you did?
Yeah. And it's surreal to see myself in one of these boxes. So thank you very much.
Oh, it was great. This scene here was really important because this is the introduction. And this shot here is the one where I didn't want anyone to see you till you said these lines. That's why I framed it so that we only saw your eye and the back of your head, because we wanted these guys to be coming in with a great deal of trepidation, because Vladimir Berko has just had enough, as we see, with the incompetence of his men.
Yeah. Nathan's lied to us. He plotted to turn the gas against us. Your trust nearly cost us everything.
Yeah, beautiful shot. Really operatic.
It worked great.
But without being at all camp, without being at all self-commenting.
Have you found a way to reconfigure?
I'll tell you another really good thing, Tim, was you're suggesting that I don't do a Slavic accent and I just adopt this sort of Western, slightly foreign sounding, mm-hmm. but basically Western educated voice.
I don't know where he went.
I remember the great movies about the Second World War, in which a great many of the German army officers are played by British actors.
Yeah.
And they all speak in their own voices. They don't try to sound German. And no one ever questioned it. No one ever said, wait a minute, those guys are British. They're, you know,
right.
Because it's about the performance. And sometimes, you know, accents can get in the way.
Yeah.
And it's another thing for the actor to think about that I think is unnecessary. You know, I suppose it's part of the job, and I've seen so many actors pull it off without any interference in what they're doing. But, you know, for me, it's like, if we don't need it, let's not bother.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, if an accent is indelibly inherent to a character, then you completely absorb it and you use it, and it is what it is. But the more you can strip away for an actor to the essence of being a real person, then it usually strengthens rather than weakens your presence and the effect of their character. And particularly as there are quite a few actors around Berko who have these weird accents.
Yes.
It's good that there's something purer at the center. So Thanks, man.
It's funny. I saw a few web postings about the character of Bierko, and people were saying, you know, oh no, it's another British bad guy, because we had Amador and Saunders in year two,
yeah,
who were both British actors.
Yeah, they were.
So people thought that, you know, we were, but I mean, the web postings, as great as they are, represent only a small, tiny fraction of the audience. And while, you know, what they say is very important, it's seeing, you know, what the rest of the audience reacts to. And if they're taken with the story, then forget about the accents.
Sure, and also I've had feedback from my various informants who told me that, you know, some of the web postings have been rather favorable.
Oh, yeah, no, most of them have been. Most of them have been really good, so... And you're still around, though.
I'm still alive. As we're sitting here, you're broadcasting episode 11, I think.
Right.
Next.
By the time everyone hears what we're saying, the year is finished.
Ah.
And I think you're shooting. You're still shooting.
I'm still shooting.
And you're in like 1920 or something like that.
I'm not sure. I think in 1920. I don't know if somebody's listening, but in 1920, I'm still alive,
yeah,
with the promise of.
Well, if you're still alive in 19 or 20, this is my prediction, and because I've said this without seeing the scripts, you have to be part of the end game. It's, yeah, a little late to introduce.
Well, I think I break out, because I was just looking at CTU, and which, to me, as a viewer, and when I was at the studio one day, just waiting around, I walked onto the CTU set, and it was completely lit, but there was nobody there.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And it was like being in a museum installation.
Yeah.
It was quite extraordinary. I mean, the beauty and the atmosphere conveyed by the design and the lighting. And I long to be in CTU. Well, I'm taken into custody eventually into CTU, and then I break out. So.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, and the thing about CTU, the funny thing you say that about CTU, most of the actors that work in CTU want to get out of CTU.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, my gosh, we're in here again.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine the hardest work is for you constructing your shots is going back into CTU and trying to make the familiar just a little more interesting than last time.
Well, interestingly enough, I got a script that had a kind of a Caine Mutiny situation inside CTU in which Lynn was getting out of control, and everybody there was watching him get it out of control, and it just, you know, not unlike the Caine Mutiny, everyone was trying to determine each other's feelings about this until finally it all comes together and they decide to make a change, which happens in the next episode. We've got nothing on this guy. But that's unusual for CTU, because CTU is usually, I've got so-and-so on line one, I'm tracking this guy on the radar or whatever, and it's usually that kind of Bridge of the Enterprise type approach.
Out of Mall was an acceptable loss.
And because we lost our only real lead, and Lynn's looking for someone to blame.
I was appointed by the President of the United States. It was a field call.
I know. And between you and me, I think you made the right call back at Mall.
Calling the President.
Look, Jack, the trail's gone cold. There's no point in fighting, and let's just go back to CTU and square it.
Fine.
Look, I'm sorry. But I also have to take your gun. Jack, don't make this any more difficult than it already is.
He's good. Keith is so good. I mean, one thing about watching the previous four seasons, the driving force of Keith's presence and commitment is so compelling and so exemplary to the other actors around him.
Miss Rains, you have a call on line
one. Oh, it just raises everybody up. His just uncompromising commitment to the show, just everyone gets caught up in that. That's such a great thing. It really keeps everyone going, because I've been on shows where the lead actor is more about, you know, the accoutrements or when I go home or how little I have to work.
Sure.
And then that just goes through everybody, and you're it's just not, the work just isn't as good. I mean, all these actors, Kim Raver in this part here and Garant, are just completely, you know, immersed in doing the best that they can do. And,
yeah,
and everybody comes so prepared, so ready to go. People know their lines. And then it also forces, you know, when the actors are that prepared, It forces the crew to be prepared so that, you know, when it's time to shoot, we have the maximum amount of time in front of the camera, which, you know, the last thing you want to do is wait longer for equipment to be ready or any of that, because that takes away from the performances. Yeah. Because we just don't, you're hurrying. You're saying, oh, okay, that's good enough, as opposed to saying, no, no, we can do one more.
It's Audrey. It's personal.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
I'm on the phone with a man who claims to be
I'm so impressed by the collaboration between the production team, the crew, and the cast, that there is a real common purpose as opposed to a sort of departmental demarcation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's I haven't been involved in episodic television before. I've done guest spots on one or two shows where I've witnessed sound guys shout at the first AD because the first AD is trying to help fit the mic.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it, to me, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
To hear tension and confrontation between departments when we're all so lucky to be working
absolutely
in this industry and whatever our roles. Stop the Centaux gas from being... But I think that on 24, it seems to come from the top, the absolute hands-on involvement of the creators, the writers, the producers, the directors, the art department, the wardrobe department. I mean, it's a fantastic group of people who know they've got to keep the ball in the air.
Yeah, yeah. I like, you know, what I particularly like and what worked, I think, which helped when we started working on this episode is the fact that when we rehearse, we clear the crew out, and it's just the actors, the director, the script supervisor, and the assistant director, so that you can work through the material without the distraction or the pressure of other people standing around. There's nothing worse for me to know that one of the actors I'm working with in their peripheral vision sees somebody standing there with their arms folded looking impatient, as opposed to the stage is ours and we're going to get it right and we're going to talk about it. And then we'll bring in all the technical people.
Well, the technical crew are certainly respectful of that
yes.
process and not begrudging of it. They're embracing of it. And when you've just got basically a concrete bunker and you're
yeah.
trying to generate
yeah.
sense of atmosphere
yeah.
and tension, it certainly helps. I must say, by the time we were on a truck getting out of there, I was ready. There's only, you know, I've shown them my left profile, I've shown them my right, you know, it's sort of...
Well, we went through that. I mean, even in this episode, I was thinking, okay, we've done three scenes in here so far, and it's basically a box. You know, okay, walk from over there. No, walk from yeah. over there. Okay, now we're going to stand you back here. I mean, it was a challenge to do. And then the last thing you want to do is tell an actor that the reason I want to play this over here is because I haven't played anything over here, you know, and...
Sometimes, though, Tim, that's all you have to say
yeah,
to the actor.
Exactly.
And they get, because searching for motivations to be over there can get a bit sort of thin. But if you, okay, sometimes the direct instruction is the best one.
I think
one.
I said that to you at one point. I think I said, okay, we're going to do this over here just because I'm running out of spaces to do this.
He's either disabled or shut down the transceiver.
Curtis, how could you let this happen?
I'll get dispatch on it. One of my team's en route to pick me up. We'll find them.
You don't even know where to look. Get back to CTU, we'll deploy from here. Damn it.
See, now here's where all the... This is yeah. where the Kane mutiny is starting here in CTU. You have Lynn starting to wonder, you know, who's messing with him and playing with files. And that's all going on.
I can't remember what... He gets put in the cell, and does he stay there, or is he...
No, he... You know what? I haven't seen, but he... You know, when the gas gets released in CTU, he plays some part in either getting people out or dealing with it, and that ends up being his demise, as I recall. So if you're listening to this and haven't watched the upcoming CDs, then stop listening to me right now.
It wasn't me who said that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, it's...
I'm applying discretion and integrity. They're both so good. They're both so interesting together.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Yeah.
These two.
It came on my screen that Jack's gone missing.
He's following a lead on the Centaux gas. He needed to go alone. I just transferred a call from my station to him.
You know, I have daughters who spotted Marilyn as a secretary on Legally Blonde.
Oh, really?
And when I said I was working with her, they just thought this was incredible.
Communications archive. She has this great way about injecting humor at moments that are, it's completely wrong, but it works perfectly in the story. It's something that is so inappropriate given the crises that they're dealing with, but that happens in the real world. That happens when there's a crisis. Somebody has a joke or a line of some kind that is irreverent. You know, it's not all about the task at hand, because we're human, and that's the kind of stuff that happens.
Yeah.
You know,
so. No, her comments and attitudes are incredibly refreshing, exactly because of that.
Yes. Well, she's not a typical television character, right?
Doesn't she have a lover at the beginning of this?
Yeah, she did. At the beginning of the year, she has a lover, but at the moment, he's kind of disappeared.
Okay.
He's in a holding cell, like so many people end up in. Sometimes if you go to the holding cell on CTU.
Yeah, isn't Kim Raver's brother still in a holding cell somewhere?
I think he's in there, and the young son of Sheree's character from last year.
He's still there.
I think he's still in the holding room, too. And
Sheree was so good, my goodness. Her whole family, that whole group of actors were templates for me.
Is someone tracing the call?
They can't. It's being sent through multiple relays.
I'm not talking to a terrorist. You talk to them, you find out what he wants.
Mr. President, he's demanding to speak with you.
Jude is fantastic, isn't he?
Oh, he was amazing, especially during all this. He's trying to manage a president who is on the verge of being completely out of control. And he's just standing there, just trying to guide him into maintaining his calm, let alone making a correct decision.
Is it just coincidence that a Nixon lookalike was cast? I mean, Greg, that wasn't...
Yes, no, it was not intentioned to... Actually, his casting, when we were looking for the vice president last year, everyone was talking about good actors, and they wanted a character who could do what they're asking Greg to do in this, and that's that kind of waffling that, you know, okay, I'm going to make a decision, and then he's, you know, reluctant, and then afraid, and then, you know, strength comes back. And I'd worked on a series along with Stephen Cronish, who's one of the executive producers on 24, called Profiler. And Greg worked for us on that show. And when the part was discussed in the middle of year four, that's how Steve brought his name up, and that's how he ended up on the show.
I see.
It's our Russian oppressors I mean to hurt, not your people. However, if you refuse to cooperate, I will have no choice but...
Now here's Bierko telling the president, this is what I need from you, or I'm going to let this go.
You just said that killing Americans didn't serve your interests. This would be senseless murder.
Yes,
it would. So give me Suvorov's route.
I'll need some time.
You have 15 minutes.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, nice, Tim. Nice.
Yeah, the hang-up worked great.
Yeah.
Well, and now, you know, Bierko becomes the puppeteer here. And the puppet on the end of his strings is the President of the United States, which the two of you guys made work so well. It just is, you know, the threat that the character of Bierko has over the president. I mean, even as weak as Greg's character sometimes appears to be, imagine the choice. Giving up the head of state versus poison gas being released in your country.
No, I mean, the dilemma is made absolutely tangible. And although, you know, Jack takes executive decisions for himself and makes them work, God, who'd be in either of their situations, or any of those people at CTU? I mean, Bierko, by becoming the puppeteer, of course, means that he's not in the action.
Yeah.
He's sort of behind the scenes pushing buttons. But as long as you feel his presence, I think in the episode 10 after this, Bierko is less physically present because the things he's orchestrating are
starting to unfold. Yeah, all of his plays are starting to be out there, but he's got everybody going, and especially now in episode 9, you know, this is Bierko's first appearance here, and suddenly he's got the president on edge, and there is a conflict within CTU because there are those in CTU that have detected a possible threat against the presidential motorcade, which Lynn doesn't believe and won't accept. So Bierko has really turned everybody upside down. He's got the Western White House turned upside down, and he's got CTU infighting going on there. I don't think the infighting was part of the design, but this is the kind of thing that this kind of a threat, I think, does to people.
Right, sure. And it absolutely rings true, doesn't it, within any administration, yep. I'm sure.
Every time I'm on 24 and we do stuff like this, and people are trying to decide the course of action, it's, you know, regardless of your political persuasion, what was it like in the White House on 9/11? What was it like? How do you cope with a situation like that? Just like this, how do you cope with?
I'm here, where are you?
Oh, now here's another thing that's about to happen here that is Bierko's moves, because Nathanson now, who has been working with Bierko, and Bierko thinks he's been double-crossed. I don't know what you think. And so that's why Nathanson's on the run. In fact, even though you only killed one person, you've orchestrated the death of at least two.
Yes, and hopefully there'll be a great many more. I was giving an offline at some point to one of the actors on the other end of the telephone. I was there when you eventually fly the chopper into this scene.
Yeah.
How that doesn't cause pileups on the freeway. Because, I mean, it's so incredibly realistic, as people will see.
Yeah, and it was a huge gun, too. So it's, you know. I mean, this one here was right by Olympic Boulevard, and we closed the street. You can see the street lamp on the left in the top there. That's Olympic Boulevard. Okay. And we closed it for the helicopter to come down and take off. Right. And this building, of course, we had complete control of. But even firing blanks, it sounds real.
It sounds real. And it looks so real. It's a big gun with flashes. I mean, it's the realism of the show and the realism of the acting, which... I mean, I don't watch a lot of television, but it makes everything else seem Stone Age.
It's such an exciting place to be. It's just the kinds of stuff that happens, and the day goes so fast. The day just goes so fast on this show.
Did you?
Not exactly.
What the hell does that mean?
A man claiming to be James Nathanson called here about 20 minutes ago. He said that he had information on the terrorists.
What was Kim's background before this? What had she been on?
Third Watch. She was on a series called Third Watch.
I mean, she's so confident and so beautiful. I mean, I feel she must have had
Third Watch.
Some
I believe experience. She played a paramedic.
Right. He's good too, James.
Yeah, James is terrific. Sean did a great job.
R.I.P. Bless him.
All right, I'll send them to your screen.
Well, we can do it here. Unless you have a problem working with me on this.
No, it's fine.
Excuse me. Bauer?
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in the freight elevator.
You need to get out of there now. You're cornered.
We did all this stuff in this warehouse in 2 days. Was it 2 days? Yeah, I think it was 2 days. It was really a breakneck pace.
But that gives this stuff such energy.
That
pace and the speed with which these big sequences are undertaken. There's a believability they have without compromising any production value.
You know, all of us that direct the show, you know, we talk about different approaches. There's obviously a documentary feel to it.
Mm.
And the other thing that John Cassar and I like to talk about is that you shoot it like it's live. You know, like you're like it's a camera when this event is really happening. You know, it's shaky. You're going, you know, you're panning around like this. And, you know, it feels like it's a news camera following this whole incident here, which is which I think just adds to the tension and the energy. I think it's really a great, great idea.
Yeah. The news footage presentation is really convincing. Exciting.
Bierko's about to make his next big move right here. Nathanson being the loose end that he doesn't need. Of course, these two guys work for Bierko.
Yeah. Yeah, handpicked.
Yeah. But the interesting thing, Jack saves the day, but nothing is left to chance when you're talking about Vladimir Bierko. Nothing at all.
You see, this is happening right next to the 5 freeway at rush hour. I mean, unbelievable to anybody driving by. And this, the noise of the chopper and the size of the gun they're shooting.
We had one of the actors up there. He was firing the gun. It wasn't a stuntman. And Grant here, he did a lot of his own stunts, too. A lot of that running and sliding and jumping and all that stuff he did.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, it's always better, and there's always the risk of injury. But our stunt coordinator did a really nice job of showing Grant how to do this stuff so that he didn't end up getting hurt.
Have you had injuries over the 3-4 seasons?
Well, there's minor things, you know, scrapes and stuff like that. No one, thank God, has had to go off to the hospital.
That's pretty amazing. I mean,
Nathanson's dead, but there was someone else there.
Who?
I don't know yet, but he took out 3 of my men and disabled the helicopter.
Nathanson may have given him information that compromises us. Keep looking until you find him.
This is when Bierko discovers that, you know, there's someone else involved here, and it's time to take care of him, meaning Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
Diagram 7 lays out the hierarchy for first responders. Civil defense protocols for each agency are pretty well defined.
Shouldn't you get that?
It was fun. We had the chance to talk about something about who Vladimir Bierko was before he appears in the show. And I love that kind of discussion to have with actors. It's like, remember we were throwing around the idea that, you know, he came from a family in Russia in the former Soviet Union, and they had money, and they always seemed to profit from the political situation regardless of their affiliation. That stuff is always fun to talk about, you know, whether it fits in or whether it inspires anything, but it's just, it's fun for me, you
know? Yeah, and it gives a strong, I mean, it gives such a strong foundation. I mean, especially as you guys are already up to episode 9, I'm coming to the set for the first time.
Sure.
We haven't met before.
Yeah.
Well, I think we met very briefly at the wardrobe fitting.
Yes, we did.
And I'm a TV ingenue still, too, so it was great to establish at least a foundation stone for who he was and what his motivations were, why he was so hostile. I mean, the idea of the breakaway Russian Republic, unnamed, but there are a few to choose from.
Right,
and certainly I had one in my mind. The way Russia is going after the robber barons, the oligarchs, and trying to reel them back in and strip their assets. Clearly, he has, in my imagination, there are a lot of reasons he can have a grudge against Russian president.
And the thing about that is, what I like about it is also, you know, because you're right, we meet on the day or briefly in wardrobe, and then suddenly we're in a situation where we're working together on something that's so intense, you know, and without the benefit of having a personal relationship with somebody, or at least a professional relationship with some mileage to it, you really have to find a way to connect between actor and director so that something good comes from it, because you need trust between the two parts. You know, as a director, you need to trust that the actor's instincts are going to be, you know, good for the role, and that the right things will come out. And I think conversely, the actor needs to know that this is a director who is in touch with the story and the characters and all that, because then the work gets better and better. Then you can take chances. Then you can go out and say, well, you know what, maybe we could try it this way. And that's when I think the work gets to its best, is when it gets like that. When the actor and the director start to, you know, be a little bit wary of each other, then I think it starts coming apart.
You're not seriously considering it, are you?
Martha, Charles believes an assault on the Suvorovs has a good chance.
Will you please let the president speak for himself?
She's fantastic, Jean Smart.
Yeah, she did a great job. Yeah. And that's such a hard role.
Yeah.
That is such a hard role. She just was amazing.
Now, the control and the poise and the judgment is such a good foil to Greg.
Charles.
Martha, please. If I don't give them the information they want, tens of thousands of Americans will die on our own soil, maybe hundreds of thousands, and I will be responsible.
All right, Charles, there's got to be another way.
The thing was, is she got to be the conscience. You know, here is the right thing to do. You know, there was no politics that motivates her. What motivates her is what's right. And that's a great thing to have, because all politics, and even the best leaders of the best nations are compromised by politics all the time, and they have to be. And what's great about her character, she shines a light on that. She shines a light on the whole thing. And we see that lots of times our leaders have to do things and they lose sight of what the right thing is.
It certainly makes it clear how often the right thing is a gray area.
Yes.
Isn't that the policy of this country? Isn't that the point of the treaty you just signed?
It's not. It never is.
It was separating. Here's one. And the other one's up here.
How clued up are you in all this technology? Because, I mean, it's amazing to me when, you know, they had all the playbacks of the
satellite stuff.
I
couldn't tell you what computers and how and all that stuff. What I did, you know, work out with everybody was what I wanted to see and when I wanted it to see it and who I wanted to see it. Because the important thing in all this stuff that was going on in CTU between Chloe and between Audrey and between Buchanan was, you know, you had everybody trying to keep CTU on the right course while Lynn was taking it the other way. And so they had to be surreptitious about all this. So it was a lot of looks. It was, you know, little messages on the computer and all that other kind of stuff, because they couldn't stand up and walk across the room and say, here's what's going on. Here's what we need to, here, we need to help Jack with this information. And, you know, Buchanan goes and he pulls Lynn away from Audrey. Audrey's able to decrypt the file that Chloe has received. Now that she finishes doing that, it goes back to Chloe, who is then able to give Jack the information. Now, Lynn discovers the last part of it. So we were working out when these things appeared on the screen so that the actors could see it, the audience could see it. And then when Lynn turns, where he just misses seeing it. So we have, there's a lot of people involved. You have the computer playback guys that are sitting behind there. And then you have all the actors, of course, that are working out the timing of when they should look over to another actor to suggest it's time for you to look at your screen, and then a look, you know, around from there. And then our camera operators are trying to catch those looks at the right moment and then pan to where they're looking. And, you know, it's really kind of a dance
because it's happening in real time. Yeah. That's not something you can just make in editing.
Yeah. It was really kind of a complicated choreography of cameras, actors, and technology. You know, that we talk about the behind-the-scenes people and how invaluable their contributions are. And they are, and, you know, people I'm sure hear it on award shows. You know, it's a fantastic crew, and what an unbelievable group of people that worked on this. But that stuff really is true. It really is important. It's important to be able to have that thing appear on the screen so the actor can see it and react to it, so the camera operator could capture it, which can motivate the camera to move to another character who could then react. And all that tells a story and adds all that tension to it. Yeah. You know,
I mean, Rodney Chartres and Guy, real powerful contributors.
The decryption element kicked out a company called Teradyne. Over the past 3 years, they've acquired more than 100 pounds of raw strontium isotope used to create Zentox nerve gas.
What about the composer, the musician?
Sean.
I mean...
Sean is amazing. I mean, it's like, you know, I watched my rough cut of these episodes about 2 months before they aired, and then I saw them again after we did the additional scenes, just different parts. But we had temporary music in it, and I was tempted to call Sean and say, here's some things that I did, and, you know, what do you think of that? Or maybe you should, you know, think about a score like this. And I said, you know, I want him to see it, you know, in a virgin form without me saying, by the way, it's going to be scary in this part and not scary in that. You know, I wanted him to see it and for him to react to it, because his instincts as a composer are just so right on when it comes to the show. You know, when it's a tense moment and he just comes up with something in the score that just makes you sit on the edge of your seat. Even, you know, Zover uses that cliche.
But sitting on the end of the seat is what you've all together become the masters of in the creation of the show. I mean, that's why people all over the world are addicted to it. When I was asked to be on it and I hadn't seen anything and I got this big pile of DVDs and I thought, crikey, I'll watch this for 10 minutes. You know, 8 hours later, I'm still on the edge of my seat. And I feel so lucky that I was asked to be involved, that I was available to be involved.
It's worked out beautifully. It has just been a great collaboration and great fun, and yet every year it just keeps working.
It has been a challenging day, so I especially appreciate how professional you have all been. Your president is fortunate to have such talented people working for him.
Now, are you going to be throwing your hat as director into the ring for the next season?
Well, I'll throw my hat out there. It just depends on who catches it or steps on it.
Right.
I'd love to be back. It's great because it's a home. I was a producer for 2 years. I directed in year five, so I really think it makes a difference when you go back and you're familiar with people.
I'm sure it brings out the best in the crew, and as we've talked about in every other department, the familiarity of personnel, which is why your experience on the show as the producer has equipped you so preeminently to be responsible for shows 9 and 10.
For your steadfast support.
Further developments?
No, not at all.
Here's the moment where the president agrees to sell out Suvorov, and Novik is on the phone with Birko, and it's time, and is he going to do this or not? And just a nod of the head, and Novik gives up the route. And just the way Greg and Gene walk off there, you know, for him it's business. For her, there's a morality.
Right. Here we are, getting straight down to business.
That give us
best shot at destroying all the vehicles. Tell our people this is where I want them to strike.
Now, originally, we shot this as an additional scene, because when we shot on the first day, remember we staged a little thing where we said, let's go over to the map, and then you were drawing stuff on the map. And they saw that, and when they wanted additional scenes in the show, they wrote the scene based on what you had done just in that thing that we had pantomimed with you. And it ended up being a really key moment.
I like the drawing the circle and the cross. Yes.
This is it. He's finished.
He just asked to speak with you directly.
Excuse me. Mr. President, I'm afraid I have to say my goodbyes here. Affairs of state, you know, the pressures continue.
As I understand, of course.
Where is this exterior?
This is a place called Ventura Farms, which is out along the 101 past the San Fernando Valley.
Right.
It's actually a horse farm. There's a lot of thoroughbreds in that stable right behind her.
Oh, really? That looks like the presidential lodge.
Yeah, that's a stable. And there's, in fact, every one of these buildings that you see a piece of is a stable.
Very good actor.
Oh, yeah. Glenn is terrific, too.
I'll ride up front.
That's one of the things that Joel did on the show, which is the absolute correct decision. He always insisted on hiring good actors, you know, as opposed to a pretty face or... Mm. You know, a body or something like that. It was hire the great actors, and this show should be the textbook for how to do episodic television, because the great actors just give so much. They just do.
You sure your husband won't mind?
No, of course not.
Martha inserts herself into harm's way here.
Very credible as the Russian president and first lady.
They were great.
I mean, Peggy and your unsung hero in the casting film, Peggy Kennedy.
Yeah, Peggy and Debbie, they find so many great, great actors for us. This worked out good here. Yeah. I love this, the way it ended, and it's going off, and there's Birko.
Yeah. Wait. It's like a spider hovering above them.
Exactly.
A spider was very much the animal image. Ever since drama school, I've always tried to have a creature image for the whatever work I'm doing, and I've always thought of a tarantula for Birko.
No, that's a good one. Yeah. That's really
a
good one.
I tell that to one or two journalists. It seems to fit.
No, it definitely does.